Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSat certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
So I've got Amy on the line. Amy, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about what healthy sexuality looks like when a sex addict is in recovery.
One of the things we know about research and sex addicts is that they don't necessarily want sex with their own wife. And so to me, that says he's in really good recovery because he does want that with you. He has been 2 years sober. He has been in 3 facilities. And I suspect that's how he's wanting closeness with you.
And that is right. And I would agree with that 100%. Now, it's not that they don't want sex with you. It is that they've trained their brain to like something else. And so oftentimes they can't perform as well, so they avoid it. I really need to redo that clip and make that a little bit clearer. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen. She's AKA Carol the Coach, and boy, am I glad to be with you today. We've got a really interesting show. You know, at AppSats, we really believe that it is your choice as to whether you stay in the relationship, have a therapeutic separation, or leave the relationship. And so today I have expert Dr. Krister Hollenbeck, who's going to be talking with me about, you know, what do you do when you play that ping pong game of should I stay or should I go? That seems to be, I would say, probably in 75% of the cases, that seems to be a common occurrence, a common question for a variety of reasons. And yet, most of the partners that I work with want to stay in the marriage if the marriage can get healthy. It is a whole different situation if the recovering addict, or I should say the addict, is not recovering. Or he says he's recovering, and then lo and behold, he's not doing a very good job. You know, he's either slipping and sliding all over the place, or he is he's not committed to using the tools he needs to use to be in good recovery. Now, last week we had Mark Dennison on, and he talked about all the things that he needed to do to get healthy. And it sounded like a laborious routine, and at the same time, he was at the place where he gets so excited about his program that he clearly wants, to give back and be a role model. You know, I was talking to a man this morning, and he said, I don't like to be told what to do. Therefore, I don't want my wife telling me, no, I can't do something, or yes, I can, or I should. And I said, I wonder if you could shift that energy and make it about you. And he said, I'm not sure what you're saying. And I said, could you ever see yourself someday being a sponsor? Could you ever see yourself being a mentor? And feeling that confidence of, wow, I really am working a program and it's making a difference, not only in my life, but in the guys that I'm working with. Because that's the truth of the matter. That, you know, it's about giving back. That's the end of the program. And so clearly, I want you to know that if your husband's working a good program, he's probably going to want to be able to give back. That's the 12 steps. And so, I wonder if you have wondered if he is working enough, a strong enough program to keep you feeling safe. That is an amazing accomplishment. If a husband can keep you safe, it means he's working a good program and he has empathy. He understands what he's put you through, and he's willing to work on the relationship because he wants to get better. He wants to get better for himself, and he wants to get better for you. What do you think? So that's what we're going to be talking about with Crystal. We're going to be talking about getting things together and looking at what options are and normalizing the feelings that it's not unusual. It is not unusual at all to question, should you stay or should you go? And it's not a bad thing if you stay. A lot of people say, oh, I hate that I'm teaching my kids to put up with this. But the truth of the matter is that if you decide to stay for the family, that is 100% your decision. Now, I got an email from a woman. We'll call her Joy. And she said, hi, Carol. I'm currently in therapy with my husband, as he has had many, many, many affairs in the past few years. With each affair, my husband sought out women that he said were desperate and easy to manipulate so that he could feel like he was superior and so that he could seduce them into falling in love with him. You know, this is super interesting because this morning I was listening to Super Soul Sunday with Gary Zukav, who, if any of you ever watch Oprah, you know that she just adores him and feels like his book, The Seed of the Soul, really changed her life. And Gary was admitting that he was a sex addict. And Oprah said, what do you mean sex addict? What is a sex addict? Now, this was not that old of a show, but I think she was so, this is a story I make up, she was so confused as to how her favorite mentor, her favorite author, could be a sex addict, even if he's in recovery. She wanted him to explain himself. So he said the very thing that this woman, Joy, is writing about. He said, I used to scan the room and find the least confident, most insecure woman that I could, and I would prey upon her for a couple of different reasons. One, because it was easy and I wouldn't get rejected. And two, because then she would adore me. And even though I didn't want a relationship with her, I love the adoration. So, Joy writes, he would feel superior to them and get them to fall in love with him. Then he would have sex with them a few times and then end the sexual relationship. But he would continue to talk to them. He states that he did not feel love for or be in love with these women. But he wanted to feel loved, validated, and like there was someone there for him. His therapist says that he was acting out of narcissistic, egocentric motives and addiction. However, our couple therapist is arguing that he did love these women, but it was an immature love. I'd love your take and any advice, as I am deeply frustrated with and troubled by the discrepancy between the therapists. He is literally the therapist that says that he is in love is literally arguing with us about it, and I don't feel positive about our therapeutic relationship. Kind regards, Joy. Well, Joy, I have to agree. You know, if I have a differing opinion than one of the people in the coupleship, and if I state my point and they state differently and we are in direct opposition, I back off. I back off because A, I might be wrong. B, it's not really, if I'm giving them my professional recommendation and they don't buy it or they don't want it or they don't believe it, I am not going to get in a power struggle about it. I'm going to let them have their own belief system. Now, the truth of the matter is, I wonder what your husband had said that he did not feel love for or in love with these women. It was about wanting to feel loved. That's an issue around sex and love addiction. So I can buy into that. And he loved the feeling of being loved. He was not in love. So I'm sorry that I would agree with you. I think the therapist is probably wrong. We are wrong from time to time. And I don't blame you for not feeling positive about your therapeutic alliance with the therapist. And if this kind of thing continues to happen, I would continue to look for a different therapist. I mean, one of the things we know about addiction is that people can be in denial. And my job is to break the denial. But I don't beat people with a hammer. I don't beat them over the head with a hammer to get them to see it my way. We all believe, as therapists, in predetermination. And if you can't work out this conflict, which hopefully you could. I mean, I have at times been too harsh or too direct. And if a partner or an addict came back and said, I felt disrespected or I felt devalued, I immediately went into apology mode because that has never been how I want to make somebody feel. And I am human. And I've been known to do that from time to time. But what I really try to do is learn from that mistake, because when you know better, you do better. And so I would say, although I don't want to criticize your therapist, because I'm only hearing, Joy, your belief system around this, I would say be open and honest with the therapist and I can't remember if it's a him or a he. Let him know how you feel and see if you don't get an apology or a genuine shifting of perspective so that he says, wow, I didn't mean to do that. I need to let you know I am sorry and I'll be more sensitive. And then if that doesn't happen, then really watch to see if you can have a therapeutic relationship with this man, because sometimes when they over-control or dominate, it's really hard to feel safe. Right? And safety and stabilization is the number one thing we want for you. And so, I hope that helps, Joy. And good luck with you and your husband, because it sounds like he's got a lot of issues to look at, as probably growing up issues, to determine why it was so important for him to feel that admiration, attention, and approval. And, gosh, what I really believe is that oftentimes that there's been an earlier wounding. And when an earlier wounding occurs, then it's up to you to help him to understand himself better by working with your new couples therapist. And finding out why is there such a wounding there. Now, the truth of the matter is you may not ever find out, but at least that's a good place to start. And when I said it's up to you, it's not up to you, but it sounds like you were really hanging in there with them and you want to be a part of the solution. So I really appreciate your question to me and getting another person's take. And I hope that answered your feelings. All right, your question. And as I indicated, we are super excited to have Dr. Crystal Hollenbeck on. And she is working diligently with addicts and partners to help them heal. She runs intensives. She does workshops. She's just got a vast array of knowledge. So I always love having her on the show. And you know I have two podcasts, and I try to keep her on both of them regularly because I really believe that she's spot on when she gives advice. And so, Dr. Crystal, I welcome you to Partner Betrayal Radio. And listen, I've just been singing your praises about how good you are at helping couples heal.
Oh, hi, Carol. It's so great to talk to you again, and thank you so much. You know, it's just a great privilege to walk with people through their healing journey. And the fact that we get the opportunity to help people in some of the worst times of their life is really just a blessing. And so thank you for your kind words.
Well, absolutely. And I was telling our listeners before you joined the call that truly the should I stay or should I go question is one that almost all people deal with at some point in their relationship in general. You know, I say marriage is the institution that holds you together when you fall in and out of love with each other. And then when such a betrayal occurs, it's so common to wonder, what should I be doing here? So tell us a little bit about why you picked this topic today.
Well, you know, you're exactly right. I think it's one of the very first decisions that a betrayed partner has to face. You know, marriage, the foundation of marriage is honesty, fidelity, and accountability. And when a partner is discovering their husband's betrayal, all of their wedding vows have been broken. They're very confused. They're in a state of trauma, as you know. And the reason that this decision is so important is because it's the foundation of how to move forward. So, for example, everyone is different. Although betrayal trauma, sex addiction, it's universal, and there are things about treatment that are universal, we're still dealing with individual people. So their individual situations, personalities, their history is all unique, their support system. And so when they're trying to make that decision, you know, some partners get into treatment with a therapist right away, and that's very helpful to walk them through the betrayal trauma at the very beginning and just that overwhelming decision of, do I stay, do I leave, is he safe, I don't know who he is, I don't know who I'm married, I can't believe what he's done. You know, they're looking at safety. Oh my goodness, I want to protect my children from this, right? A lot of times they've said in the past, oh, if my husband ever betrayed me, I would be gone. I wouldn't stay in a marriage no matter what. Well, then you've built a life and they realize it's not such an easy decision. There's financial pressures. A lot of times their faith can be very valuable during this time, but also can add extra pressure, right? If he says he's sorry and he won't ever do it again, am I supposed to stay in the marriage then? Or because he's betrayed me and had an affair, should I go ahead and leave? Sometimes we see partners that come in and they've already gone through an affair. They've already discovered something. Maybe they go to a marriage therapist who hasn't really been trained in how to deal with this. So they work through it and they think things are fine, and then they discover something else. And so that pressure on them to have to make a decision, all of the responsibility just gets put onto the partner. You know, we always use that dump truck analogy, right?
Right.
person with the addiction is just dumping all of this information. She's discovering things. She's finding out things. A lot of times at the beginning, he's lying and gaslighting. It's very confusing. But she's trying to figure out, now I have the responsibility. What will people think of me if I stay? Who's going to find out? What will people think of me if I don't stay? So there's just so much pressure on her from her family, from society, from church. You know, people that love her are going to say, get out. I can't believe he did this to you. Some people will say, no, you need to stay and forgive him. And, you know, you're in shock. You're traumatized. But it really is, I think, one of the pressing decisions that I see my partners faced with. And then we also have the anger related to it, right? So they have this anger reaction, like, get out. I don't want anything to do with you. But then sometimes they have another reaction, Carol, I'm sure you've seen, where they try to draw closer to him, maybe have more sex or try to figure out, take on the responsibility themselves. So it's a really, really important decision that they have to make at the beginning of treatment.
Yeah, absolutely. And so obviously a partner-sensitive clinician and or coach can really help someone kind of tease out the different feelings that a partner may be having and the different reasons they may be having the feelings. You mentioned several of them. For love of the family, they may want to stay together. For love of the church, they may want to stay together. For financial reasons, they may want to stay together. And or they may need immediate separation from the offender because they need to feel safe. And so they really have to pay attention to what their intuition is saying. What would you advise a partner to do when she's faced with this incredible decision?
Well, usually what we advise is, I always say, I can't tell you whether to stay or go, but where my concern is that you're in a state of trauma, and the trauma is very real. The brain has been impacted. The body is impacted. You're not going to be yourself. There's so much going on right now. And usually I recommend, if you want to stay, I recommend you stay at least long enough to get some trauma treatment. Usually what we'll recommend, if they can, to stay for a year. And the reason we recommend a year, and then assess your marriage at the end of the year. And the reason for that is because, first of all, it's not even fair to you that you're having to make this decision right away. You have so many things pressing on you. And, of course, safety, Carol, like you said, is the number one issue to take a look at. So what I recommend is, if you're going to stay, I recommend you stay a year for two reasons. One, you need to get help yourself. You've got to be able to work through the trauma, get stable. If you are going to leave, you need to have a plan for it. You don't want to make a major life decision when you're in a state of trauma. And secondly, you want to see and get educated. You know, one of our most important jobs, I think, Carol, as therapist, is to really educate our clients right from day one. I always educate them on sex addiction, betrayal trauma. I always recommend your podcast, books. I give them a list of books to read, get into meetings, get with other partners. We want to get you educated. People have no idea what sex addiction is a lot of times. They don't understand what's happening. They just think it's a character issue. He's a horrible person. They're so shocked. So another reason to stay a year is, I always say, what you're saying to your husband is, you have harmed me, and I'm willing to give you the opportunity to get help. Because I understand now, I'm learning that you have a real problem of addiction. So if you get into therapy and you do recovery, I'm willing to support you as you get help. And I'm going to heal, and then we're going to give it some time and see where we are as we progress. But I'd like to take that pressure off of the partner. Give yourself a year. Reassess where you are at the end of the year. How are you feeling? Do you see your husband has been honest Has he been actively, consistently earning your trust back? Has he been accountable? Has he been consistent with recovery? How are you feeling? So I just encourage them, if you can stay, let's do that. However, for safety, we might need to leave the marriage. Or, Carol, I've had several partners who, in the very beginning, I will educate them and talk with them, and they say, Crystal, I want him to get healthy because he needs to be a good dad, or I want him to get healthy because I do care about him, but I'm not going to be married to him. And I think that's a healthy decision as well. And so then our role turns into helping them with the betrayal trauma as they are divorcing and what that looks like. So either way, we are trying to help that partner as she's making that very important decision. Carol, can you hear me?
I said that, yes, absolutely. I do believe that we really need to do someday, Crystal, a show on therapeutic separation and a show on divorce with integrity. Because one of the things that I know is that this is the worst thing that's ever, ever happened. And if they have children, it feels like a landfill, a minefield, all the time, even if the kids don't exactly know what's going on. And truly, when they're dealing with this kind of conflict, it can be hard to know what the right thing to do is. It can be hard to wait and ask some of those tough questions after the kids go to bed when they're soundly asleep. And that's where your recommendation for a partner to come in and see a partner-sensitive therapist and have a safe place to discuss this stuff kind of preempts that need for them to go to their husbands immediately and perhaps lose some emotion regulation, if you know what I mean.
Oh, well, you're exactly right. They're in a complete state of trauma. Their thoughts are overwhelmed. And I always tell them, you're not going to be okay for a little while. I educate them on trauma. Trauma impacts all three parts of the brain. It impacts you physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. And when we're talking about a separation, we do what's called a therapeutic separation. And so if there are safety issues, let's say there's abuse of some kind that might be physical or with the children. We really talk about what a separation looks like. If you decide to do a separation, please get with a therapist who understands sex addiction, because we still need the addict to be accountable to the partner. We want to try to make her feel safe. Where is he staying? What are they doing? Are they going to stay under the same roof? What does that look like? What are the expectations? You know, when partners come into me, Carol, at the very beginning, they have so many questions. You know, what's this going to look like? What does addiction recovery look like? What do I do? What shouldn't I do? Who should I tell? There's just so many questions that they have. And again, related around separation or divorce, we want to make sure that it's done where both the partner and the addict have support, but mainly that we have safety. So safety would be for her so she feels emotionally safer. We want to set her up for a good support system. We want to make sure that he's being accountable to her, whichever way they're going to separate, whether it's under the same roof or living separate. So you're exactly right. Emotionally, they're so overwhelmed. They're losing focus. They have intrusive thoughts. They're having nightmares. One minute they'll feel like they want to talk with him, the next minute they can't. It's very, very overwhelming. But yes, there are times that separation can be discussed if you don't want to get divorced. Although I do always recommend to all partners to meet with a divorce attorney. I really think they need to be educated on what would it look like if you did have to get divorced. That also empowers partners to feel safer, to have more confidence, to have more information.
Yeah, and definitely information is power. And for them to understand how finances might be broken down on what that would mean in terms of, you know, custody of the children and visitation. It is very important that partners figure that out. Now, I typically advise partners to take somebody that they really trust that can hold confidence because, Crystal, you know, when the brain goes offline, it is really hard not only to make decisions, but to hear information and know how it's filed because their executive functioning isn't working as well as it could be. And so just like for medical appointments, I always say a second set of eyes and a second set of ears will help that partner figure out what she wants to do next.
I absolutely agree with you. That is something that is done in the very first session. We always want to ask our partners, do you have a support system? Who's a safe person that you can tell everything to? And I'm sure you've seen this, Carol. Well, I've had partners who they don't want to tell anybody. And we have to really work through that. You have to tell someone. And, of course, we also get them into support groups. But, yes, go meet with the attorney. I also at times recommend that they might want to go see a psychiatrist or talk to their medical doctor, take someone with them to that visit as well, make sure that they're letting them know what they're going through, and perhaps they might need some help to sleep or regulate their focus for a temporary time. But absolutely, having a safe person that can walk through this with them. And, you know, you talked about doing a show on walking them through divorce. It's very, very important for betrayed partners, whether they're staying in the marriage or divorcing. In fact, I have two partners right now who are divorcing, and we are meeting every week. We are doing EMDR therapy. We are working through boundaries as they're co-parenting, going through the divorce process, the grieving process. Either way, you still have a lot of trauma and work and healing to do, whether you stay or whether you leave. You also have to work through some of the aspects that come later on in the healing process, such as forgiveness, being able to communicate in a healthy way. And that's because you probably have to co-parent. Sometimes I have people that work together, and they're not able to sell the business or buy each other out. And they're still going to have to be in each other's lives for whatever reason it may be. So there's a lot of aspects to the healing process for the partner, making that difficult decision whether she stays married and does recovery work or whether she decides to divorce, she still has the recovery work to do to heal from the betrayal trauma.
And so, Crystal, how do you determine when a group would be beneficial for somebody who is trying to decide, do I stay or do I go?
Well, I do not put partners in a group right away. So that's a great question, Carol, that you would assess with your partner as the therapist. You want to make sure, are they leaving or are they staying? And we make that decision before disclosure. And so I'm probably not going to put, you know, we try to be very careful with groups, who I'm choosing to put into a group. We have to assess each person. We have to look at what would the benefit of this group be for them. We have to talk to them to see what are they hoping to get from the group. And so sometimes you don't know. You know, I have partners that get together in groups, and as time goes on, they decide to leave the marriage, and that would be because their husband continues to act out, or they just decide, I understand, I'm in a place of healing, and I just don't want to be married. And so they may decide to leave the group at that time, or they may decide to continue in the group. And everybody is supportive for each other. But I think the therapist has to really assess that with the partner. The groups are very important. I don't believe in open groups. I don't believe in partners coming and going out of a group if it's a therapeutic group done by a therapist. I think they should be closed group. We take a group of women, we put them together in a group, because my experience has been that my partners really bond. And so I have some that if I can see that they're really stable and they're doing well, then I might ask the group, how do you all feel about a new person joining the group? And so I will ask them, give them the opportunity. We will talk a little bit about, you know, what the situation is. And so, you know, group is not just one specific way to do it. I think it has to be done with a trained therapist or coach. There has to be consideration and then considering all the partners within the group. You know, Galen Ray Emerson, I know you know who she is. She runs groups, I believe, that are specific for women going through divorce. And I know I've given her website to many partners who are looking at divorcing, and she would have some specific groups that could probably be done online. Her website is womeneverafter.com. She does a great job with partners who are divorcing, and I have referred several to her that I've not been able to put in groups myself, that they might be able to find a group through her as I'm seeing them weekly, and then they still get group support. So some women have a hard time being in – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say she is an APSATS-trained coach who has developed that niche for anybody who's listening, and she really has a heart for women that have made the decision to get a divorce. And so she runs these groups. She does workshops, and – you know, we were just talking this week on the listserv about what are some good books for women that want to get divorced. And Galen chimed in and said, there really aren't any. The best, she said, many of the books that are just about divorce that might fit betrayal are very, very angry. And although anger is a natural emotion and part of the grieving cycle, we really want to help with emotion regulation, too. So I'm going to ask you, because that's great that you refer out to somebody at APSATS that really has made this a niche. Crystal, what would you say for somebody who really can't make that decision? She just doesn't know. What would the next piece of advice be for her?
Well, if you're not sure, then I always say don't do anything. So that would mean that you would stay in the marriage. If the women that I see that get divorced, they're very clear on it, Carol. The ones that I see, they know they want a divorce. And so then we walk through that process. I give them resources. We walk through telling family and friends, the co-parenting. You know, we're going through now a life transition. We look at career. We look at healing. We look at, like I said earlier, communicating and working with your ex. Also continuing to get educated, because what will that look like for your children when you have to talk to them and talk to friends and family? So if she's not sure, usually I recommend, if you don't know, let's just go ahead then and take that pressure off of you. Just stay married, and then we'll reassess this in a couple of months. Or if you feel differently next week, we'll keep processing what you're feeling, what you're thinking, and where you're at. But I want people listening to know that the most important thing is knowing that you're going to feel differently day to day sometimes. Right? It's ongoing. Today you might feel pretty strong in your decision to stay married or get divorced, and tomorrow you could feel very differently. That's all because of the trauma happening in your brain and your nervous system. It also depends on the addict, right? Your husband. Is he being empathetic? Is he behaving badly? Is he lying? Is he aloof? Is he being consistent? Also, how he does recovery can impact your decision, do I stay or do I go? A lot of times I have clients come into me and say, Crystal, I just don't know if I can keep doing this. And I remind them, I completely understand, and it's going to be difficult and draining and exhausting whether you get divorced or whether you stay married. Both journeys are difficult. Both journeys need healing and take some time, and there's a lot of different aspects to the healing process. That doesn't mean that it takes forever, though. you do heal. You do get to a place of feeling healthy and strong. You are able to manage intrusive thoughts. You do get peace and confidence about the decision that you made. But it definitely, Carol, can be exhausting and confusing at times when you're just not sure what to do. So I recommend you just stay until you know for sure you should leave.
Well, and you know, a pivotal issue for partners in trying to decide should they stay or should they go is the guilt or the shame that they feel about what is this telling our kids. Maybe the kids know some of the details of the betrayal, or maybe the kids don't even have a clue, but partners are worried about what message am I sending if I stay with him and put up with this, even if he gets better. And, you know, Crystal, I always share that that's a common feeling and a common response, and that if they stay because they have weighed the entire process and they know that it's the best thing for them or it's the best thing for their family, and they aren't miserable in that they're not suffering every single day wishing they were out of the marriage, then that's another good reason to stay for right now, because they can always make that decision to do something different, as you said, tomorrow, next week, next year, or even the next decade. But it really can be tough. That I used to say, it's the addict that carries the shame, but it's the partner that carries the pain. And then the more I got to see the shame that the partner feels for what has happened in her life, I realized, my goodness, they both carry a lot of shame. And unfortunately, I think divorce, whether to stay or whether to go, can produce that. What do you think?
Well, Carol, you're exactly right. Absolutely. And what I tell partners is this: you never have to be ashamed for fighting for your marriage. You never have to be ashamed for forgiving someone. You never have to be ashamed to teach your children that we are going to love people who do wrong, that we are all capable of doing wrong. And I tell them, if you get to the place you have to leave your marriage, once you've made the decision to stay and do recovery, if you get to the place that you have to leave your marriage, it's not because you want to. It's not anything that you ever wanted to have to make the decision to do. But if you divorce your husband, it's not because he's done wrong. It's because he refuses to do right. If you're in a marriage and with someone who's a sex addict, and they refuse to do recovery, they continue to betray you, they continue to be abusive and neglectful, they put your family at risk, your health at risk, your finances at risk. If they put you in that situation, you have to remember, this isn't what you wanted, but you are being forced to make a decision because you're teaching your children, we can't accept the unacceptable. And there's a lot of resources that your therapist will work through with you that's age appropriate, of talking to children about divorce. The children would, of course, be able to talk to a therapist and help them as they walk through that difficult time. But you're exactly right. It's so much pressure on the partner. Do I stay or do I leave? And what are the consequences for me making that decision? It's so unfair to the partner to even have to be in a position to make that horrific decision. But sometimes they're there, and so I really help them with shame, with guilt, with confusion. I really help them try to understand that this isn't what they want. This is never what, it's not their fault that they're in this situation, and they're going to do the best they can. And, you know, it really helps them to feel more confident, to have more support, And so it's just a very difficult place to be. But Carol, that's why it's so important for partners to really see someone who's a therapist that is trained to help the partners, because we can understand all of those difficult aspects of what they're going through and be somebody that can be there for them, like you said earlier, even to just talk through their thoughts and not be judged.
Oh, absolutely. And so let's talk a little bit about you, because obviously our listening audience can hear the sensitivity of your answers, the fact that you're really giving people permission to take their time, to not put more pressure on themselves, and to really work on intentional self-care by finding a partner-sensitive clinician or coach and working through this with the proper support. Now, how long have you been in the business? And tell our listening audience a little bit about you and how they can get a hold of you.
Well, thank you. I actually have offices in Orlando and Tampa, Florida. So I'm down here in Florida where it's nice and warm. And so I have clients that come from all over for my trauma intensives. So I do a 3-day trauma intensive, and I have a lot of my partners that go through it. When you're dealing with trauma, you know, there's 3 different types: acute, chronic, or complex. And the acute would be there's just one single event that's happening. And I'm sure you've had partners who they really don't have a history of trauma. This is the first thing they're experiencing. Then we have the chronic that's repeated and prolonged. And then complex is when there's just multiple traumatic events over a lifetime. And so I do, I'm a certified clinical trauma professional. I have 3-day intensives where you can come and do all of your trauma healing in an intensive setting. And I also do intensives for couples in sex addiction recovery. We do a disclosure in those intensives. And then I have a couples intensive. If you stay in the marriage and you're in recovery, and then you want to really work on having a strong, healthy marriage, both sexually and relationally, I also have a 3-day intensive that I do for couples there. So I really am focused on relationships, trauma recovery, and really helping couples to strengthen their relationship. And also, if you're getting divorced, a lot of times, like we said earlier, there are things that tie a couple together. And so I want to help the couple, whether you're staying together or whether you're getting divorced. It's a very difficult decision to do. And like you said, you can go to my website. It's just my name, crystalhollenbeck.com. And it has information about my intensives, and also I do video sessions as well as in office.
Well, and so your last name is spelled Hollenbach, right?
It's actually H-O, yes, so it's C-R-Y-S-T-A-L. Hollenbeck.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And so
that's okay. It's so easy to misspell it. It's a long word.
Well, and but what an easy process that your website is your name, and they can Google you and find you. Intensives are a great way to consolidate information all at one time. Would you share with them, I know you did it a little bit, but how your intensives run?
Yes, you're really getting 3 intense days. And the reason I think they're so successful is oftentimes you don't take those 3 days to just focus on you. You stay in a hotel, you're disconnected from life, you're not communicating with anybody, you're not going home in the evening. You come over to my office in the morning. I don't do groups. I only do individuals. So it is just me and you, or, of course, myself and the couple. We're going to go during the day, and then you're going to have intense work to do in the evening. If you're doing my trauma intensive for betrayed partners, we really look at your entire life, all of the trauma. We are going to do a full day of EMDR therapy, We're going to do a psychodrama exercise, an art therapy exercise. And I really describe it as you're coming in living from a place of woundedness, and when you leave, you're living from a place of healing. And so it's much easier than to start living from that new place. And of course, you have a notebook. We go through everything. You've got lots of skills as you leave. And it's just a good time to focus on yourself. A lot of times we do therapy, as you know. You come into my office once a week or twice a week, but then you're going back to your busy life. And this really allows you to just take a step away, really focus on your own healing, and then go back into your everyday life from a place of healing.
Yes, and then your intensives end up with the polygraph, and you do a special kind of polygraph. Tell our listening audience a little bit about why you choose to do more than the traditional polygraph exam.
So in the research that I've done, the traditional polygraph is about 70% effective. I use the latest updated voiceover analysis, which is 98% effective, and there's no known countermeasures to it. So in other words, there's no way to beat it that we're aware of. If you Google how to beat a polygraph, there's lots of different ways. There's also ways that eliminate you from taking a polygraph based on your body, different things going on. And so I have an examiner that I use that comes to my office. When I do an intensive for a couple, we will do a full disclosure followed by the lie detector exam right after. So my examiner comes to my office, we do disclosure, I talk with the partner to make sure her questions are what she wants, and then he goes and takes the exam, and then we go over the results immediately after. So that is done within the 3 days of the 3-day intensive.
Yeah, and I don't know what most listeners would think about that, but what I find is that it really encourages the addict to be 100% honest about all the details that she wants to know. And, you know, we try to protect their brains, and we say, you don't need to know all the details in terms of positions and where. But there are so many questions that a partner has that she just wants the information to be able to know the truth. And polygraphs really help to increase the truth. And so I love your system. I love what you do.
Well, you're exactly right. You know, I think the lie detector exam is very significant to help the addict for accountability. I have a lot of times they'll go in to take the exam and then they divulge new information. You know, we want to make sure for the addict that they're really free from secrets and dishonesty, that they tell the entire truth. It really helps them in their journey of recovery. And then for the partner, we have to come up with tangible ways to earn trust back. She deserves to know the truth. She deserves to know what the man she's married to has done. And she can't really continue to feel safe or to go forward if she doesn't know what's happened. And so it's a tangible way that we can say to her, it seems like he's told the entire truth. He's taken the exam. He's passed the exam. There was no deception indicated in his answers. And so this is the first drop in the bucket to go forward in his ability to earn your trust back. So I found it to be very valuable for both the person with the addiction as well as the partner, Carol.
Absolutely. And so, Crystal, we need to wrap up, but I thank you so much for helping the people that we work with figure out should they stay or should they go? It's a normal, natural question, and the answer is that is up to you. Find somebody that you can talk to. And I want to remind everybody to go to www.crystallenbeck.com. Thanks so much, Crystal.
Thank you, Carol. Have a fabulous day. So nice to talk with you.
You too. Talk soon.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye. So again, it's a tough situation, but it really makes a difference when you've got somebody to talk to from AppSaps. All right, go to appsaps.org to find that partner-sensitive coach or counselor near you. And if you don't have one, this is the best time to find somebody in your state who can do telehealth, because right now, in a lot of cases, they're waiving the deductible and they're even waiving the copay. I'm Carol Turdum-Boutique, a.k.a. Carol the Coach. And again, if you want coaching and you just don't really feel like you can afford it, email me at carol@carolthecoach.com and I will do my best to find you somebody who will take you in on a sliding fee scale. All right, that's it for today. As I always say, there will only be one of you at all times. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. Make it a good day.
For more information, go to appsaps.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.